Ish.
Are we ready?
Do we have four?
I thought I saw four.
I don't think we do. Let's wait a few minutes.
Just going to pause the recording.
Right. I'll start. Hi, everyone. I will call to order the August 22nd meeting of City of Kirkland Design Review Board, and we'll begin with roll call.
Randall Brand.
Present.
Brad Brown. Carlos Castaneda.
Here.
Shoshana Cohen. Tyler Smith.
Here.
Amy Tarps.
Here.
Thanks.
All right. I think that we have no minutes to read and or approve tonight. So I'll go ahead and announce the agenda. Tonight's agenda is a continuation of the conceptual design conference for the Moderna Bright Trails file number TRB22-00321. And I think that's all we have on the agenda for tonight, in addition to one administrative item. So now is the time for any members of the public or audience who wish to speak on any items that are not related to tonight's agenda. Is there anybody in the list, John?
There are several people, but I think they're going to speak on the project.
All right. Well, if there's no one, then let's just dive right into the Moderna Bright Trails project. I'll turn it into the staff to begin with the presentation.
Okay, great, thank you. Just one second here, let me share my screen. All right. Again, this is the conceptual design conference for the Madero Bright Trails project. So the project is located at 13033 Northeast 70th Place. The property fronts on 130th Avenue Northeast and Northeast 70th Place. The site currently contains the Tech City Bowl Center and a small commercial building. Neighboring properties include the Bridal Trail Shopping Center to the south and east. To the west is a residential apartment development. To the north are single family homes and a commercial development. The applicant is requesting construction of a 5-story mixed-use building with approximately 5,000 square feet of commercial area, approximately 370 residential apartments, and 423 parking stalls associated with the project. Parking is proposed within a structured parking below the building. Vehicular access to the property is from Northeast 70th Place and 130th Avenue Northeast. I'll just give a brief summary of the discussions the board had at the June 20th meeting. The board requested the applicant come back for a second conceptual design conference and requested the applicant submit revised conceptual designs that depict more variety between the three massing options and also include design techniques to further break up the building massing. Additionally, the board requested the applicant provide more open space near the southeast building entrance, provide more plaza space along the north facade, create pedestrian-friendly public areas, and provide responses to the applicable design guidelines. Also at that meeting, there were some discussions about the neighborhood plan and kind of the intent of the neighborhood plan and the design and the regulations that resulted from that. So I I did a little research and providing a little background on those. Originally, the Bridal Trails Neighborhood Plan was adopted by the council in 2018. As part of that, there was a policy, which is policy BT7, which basically encouraged redevelopment of the Bridal Trails Neighborhood Center into a lively, pedestrian-oriented, transit-supportive, mixed-use residential and commercial neighborhood center. Additionally, there were some standards that were established in there to allow for additional heights on the property up to five stories. But as part of this neighborhood plan, there were no zoning regulations that were adopted. Late 2020, Totem Bowl owner requested what we call a community amendment request. And this request was basically to adopt zoning regulations to allow for what the comprehensive plan supported. So the first step of that was phase one, which was reviewed by the Planning Commission in early 2021 and ultimately adopted by the council in April of 2021. The phase one elements included basically some policies for kind of the framework of the phase two, which would be the adoption of those zoning regulations. The regulations were designed for flexibility for all parcels. That included no master plan or conceptual plans for the sites. They wanted equitable allocation of the amenities. They were looking for cooperation between Totem Bowl and our RIOC in phase two. They also want to look at tools to evaluate proposed zoning regulation impacts on properties as part of the phase two element. So later in 2021, we started the phase two portion, which was the adoption of the regulation. This was started again in October. It was approved by the council in March of 2022. What this did was establish the zoning regulations, including allowed uses, heights, setbacks, step backs, open space requirements, review process, all the things that are contained within the zoning regulations. Additionally, they went into the design guidelines and made amendments to include the Bridal Trails Neighborhood Center, and also established sidewalk and pathway requirements. And again, there was no requirement for a conceptual master plan, that they would just go through the normal city's design review process. There was some discussion at the last meeting about the pathways and through block connections. So again, here's the plate that was established as part of the zoning amendments. The first, you can see the major pedestrian sidewalk along 130th and along Northeast 65th. You can see pedestrian-oriented streets along 132nd and Northeast 70th. In addition, there was to be a through-block pathway, basically one from one north-south pathway and two east-west pathways. In talking with the planner who was involved in this project, he basically said that there was no... They didn't want to establish where these locations were going to be. They wanted to leave it open to the property owners of this area to kind of work with each other and also to establish basically where these locations would be. They didn't want to predetermine what the best locations for these pathways. Again, we talked about these last meetings, so I'm not going to, and they're also identified in my staff advisory reports, but some of the key regulations are permitted that deal with this for the project are uses, including where they can be located, heights, the maximum height allowed for the site, setbacks, step backs. We talked a lot about that in the last meeting, the upper story setback requirements. There's an open space requirements, which takes into account the amount of square footage that the proposal has, the site, Parking, talked a little bit about that. They also have some high performance building standards that they'll need to meet as part of the building permit process. And finally, they will have affordable housing requirements that they will need to meet. Some of the design guidelines, again, I mentioned those previously that were adopted as part of the phase two amendments. First, the commercial frontages along arterials and through block pathways. We want to look to have those along those pathways. There are some provisions that where the applicant can propose not to have those, but they've got to show that they're not going to be used for reasonable spaces. Plazas near pedestrian-friendly building fronts, pathways, and transits. Also, there's some design guidelines regarding pathway, the actual pathway design. Some regulation, or I'm sorry, guidelines that talk about facades over 120 feet in length, and those require substantial modulation. Again, talking about upper story step backs. We want to avoid a wedding cake approach on these upper story setbacks and modulation. And finally, landscaping to soften the mass of the building in upper stories. So tonight, some of the key items we want to discuss. Have you guys discussed what are some of the key public views of the project? Identify appropriate mitigation techniques for building massing of the proposed buildings. What Bridal Trails Neighborhood Center design guidelines apply, and what should the applicant's response be at the design response conference to those? How does the proposed massing and location of the structure relate to the response to the pedestrian environment? What are opportunities for pedestrian-oriented spaces at the street level? What are the key pedestrian connections? How would the project engage pedestrians? And finally, what are opportunities for landscaping or open space on the subject property? So tonight we would like the DRB to provide guidance on the applicant's revised massing options, including their preferred option. Discuss how the design guidelines affect or pertain to the proposed development, and determine what models, drawings, perspectives, et cetera, and other application materials the applicant will need to submit with the design response conference application. And again, here's just some of the basic required items that we require of all design response conference applications. So with that, that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Tony. I have a quick question for you. In the memorandum that board received, the section that talks about high performance building standards, there's a staff comment that says that the applicant will be required to demonstrate compliance with the high performing building standards as part of the design response conference application. Mm-hmm. And does that mean that board is going to be notified in the design response mm-hmm. conference about what they are going to take action on?
Yeah, we will advise you on that. Basically, what we want to identify early on are that the applicant has started to consider those high performance building standards, and if needed, are incorporating those into their design if they will impact the design. So we just want the applicant to start thinking about those things early. And again, if they have any impact on design, want those incorporated into the design response conference.
And is that just a notice from the applicant during the design response conference, or that's something that it's going to follow up, that is going to be reviewed with you prior to the permit submittal?
Yeah, so we'll have the applicants as part of the application process, we'll have them submit preliminary information about that, how they're doing that, how they're going to meet that, and then we'll review that and kind of get that ironed out before it comes to the board.
So. Sounds good. All right. Does anyone else have a question for Tony?
Hey, Carlos. It looks like Amy does. Oh.
Go ahead, Amy.
Thank you. thank you to staff for a very informative and excellent presentation. This is great context for us. Definitely, it reduces the amount of questions I'm gonna be asking later on. And you know, my one question is, I remember seeing that the code allows the applicant to reduce the step backs if there's a provision for outdoor open space. And I was just curious if the applicant is requesting for any type of reduction in the step back.
I'm not aware of that at this time, but obviously that would be something that if the applicant is doing something like that, we'd want them to identify that as part of the design response conference.
Okay.
So that's something will be considered as part of that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Amy. Is there anyone else that has any questions? If not, it's time for the applicant to present. Do we have the applicant?
Yeah, this is Jesse Clausen from the applicant team. On the agenda, we saw that public comment comes first. Did we want to do public comment first? That's what the design review board agenda says.
That would be, that would be for design. That's for anything that's not related to this project. So that would just be.
Oh, okay. We just thought it would be helpful we're happy to do our presentation, but if public comments come up, it's always helpful, I think, for the applicant to be able to address things after public comments come up.
Yeah, usually, Jesse, we have the audience present any comments that are not related to this project before you guys start the presentation. And during your presentation, after your presentation, the audience will have time to ask any questions to the applicant. So don't worry, we'll make sure to include him.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, I'll let Maggie take it away then.
Sounds good. All right, well, we'll jump right in. Thank you, Tony, and thank you to Design Review Board, especially for having this impromptu special meeting for us, rescheduling after last Monday. I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen. Be here. All right. I'm sure most of you remember our CDC presentation back in June, and I'm happy to say that we took your guidance to heart and have returned with three new massing options that explore more distinctly different responses to the context and create engaging spaces for both the public and the residents. Here. We took notes during your deliberation last time and even re-listened to the whole meeting to be able to best incorporate your feedback. We've distilled the previous conversations down into the five main points below and used these along with the design guidelines to inform how massing should be sculpted. The new massing options are clearly different, but each of them provides two through block connections per the zoning code, more public open space, a more visible primary entry location, and ample space for enjoyable pedestrian experiences. Just as a quick reminder, the site, we are located on the east side of Kirkland in the northwest corner of the BCX zone, currently known as the Bridal Trail Shopping Center. The development site outlined with the white property line you see there is bordered to the north by Northeast 70th, which is a minor arterial street, to the west by 130th Avenue Northeast, which is currently a dead-end residential street with existing apartments, and the private property of the Bridal Trail Shopping Center to the south and east. This site is well connected to the rest of Kirkland with bus routes as well as bike lanes. The uppermost northwest corner of the property is an existing Pagliacci Pizza, and that will remain throughout construction and into the future. And I also want to remind you that the site slopes down from south to north, with the area closest to 70th having a fairly dramatic slope. We've included more information about the existing conditions and context for the site. The top image shows the site's existing northern street frontage facing Northeast 70th, The lower image does a good job of illustrating the site slope closest to 70th, and the lower right image shows the existing pedestrian experience, which is a 4-foot wide sidewalk directly adjacent to the roadway. Buildings and entries are set back and separated from the sidewalk by a planting strip there. Along 130th Avenue Northeast, there isn't an existing sidewalk on the site frontage, just a drainage ditch. The only pedestrian way is on the opposite side of the street, adjacent to the existing apartment complex's dense tree buffer. The site's eastern property line fronts the shopping center's primary driveway. This location does not currently include pedestrian access at all. Minimal parking is located along the driveway and exclusively serves the existing shopping center. Beyond that driveway and parking, the topography slopes away from the site towards an ARCO gas station at the corner of 70th and 132nd. And finally, the southern property edge also fronts the private property of the existing shopping center. Again, here, there are no pedestrian pathways running along the property edge on either the existing site or the adjacent property. The eastern portion of the site faces the drive aisle and surface parking lot of the shopping center, while the western half of the site faces a blank wall, trash, and loading for the grocery tenant. Tony mentioned this in his intro. This project is preceded by a long buildup of prep work with the neighboring public, BCX property owners, the city of Kirkland, and the client team, which included us. The revised BCX zoning was strategically written by the City Council, Planning Commission, and city planners to allow for flexibility in places they felt appropriate and not in places where they felt strongly about. The code we see today was created collaboratively and reflects the city's best understanding of public needs and wants. Our project will achieve LEED Platinum and also provide much needed middle market housing, which was really largely the city's goal when considering the subzoning. And we do have a copy of the zoning code here if it's helpful during deliberation, if you want to look at specific language. Portions of the code that do not allow for flexibility are the portions regarding setbacks and setbacks along 70th and 130th. And Amy, I think this was the question you were alluding to. In this particular zone, we've asked this question. We've been told that there are no departures or we cannot deviate from what's written in the code with these setbacks and setbacks. Averaging is allowed, but changing from the averages that are written there is not allowed. We know that the design guidelines are really the meat of design review. So in preparation for redesigning massing, we've gone back through all of them in a more detailed way. And on the following pages, we listed the design guidelines most applicable at early massing, and also those guidelines that have specific language for the BCX zone. For each, we've included responses for how we are approaching guidance. And throughout the massing options, we've added notes indicating how each option responds accordingly. And I'm not going to go through all of them because I assume you've all read everything in here, cover to cover. We'll just skip right on into massing options. We have three new distinctly different massing options for review tonight. The first option is an evolution from our previous studies. We adjusted it, though, based on the board guidance. So we carved away at the mass in several places to both add open space at grade as well as reduce the apparent bulk of the mass. Massing option two started with a clean slate, and we began by exploring ways to provide more visual porosity around the site. And massing option three, which is our preferred massing, takes the most aggressive approach at opening the development towards the perimeters and reducing mass along all frontages. The first thing we did upon refining the original massing was to add through block connections per the zoning code along both the southern and eastern property lines. With this adjustment, we rearranged internal functions to better support the through block connections. We heard you loud and clear last time that the southeast corner was not the right place for our primary residential entry. In this option, we have moved it to the northeast corner where it has better, more permanent visibility. Locating the residential entry here also provides activation for pedestrians turning onto the through block connection. We continue to activate the frontage along the eastern property line and through block connection with active uses that can handle the continual grade change. Additional active uses are located at the southeast corner where the two through block connections meet. Along with rearranging uses, we also removed large portions of the massing to provide more open space for gathering and public amenities, as well as just more views in and out of the development. This page illustrates the massing on the northern frontage of 70th. We've pushed the limits of averaging allowed by the setbacks in order to reduce that wedding cake look that's discouraged by the design guidelines. Open spaces at grade and massing shifts break down the building into a series of smaller masses as recommended by the design guidelines. The open spaces we incorporated at grade enhance the pedestrian and shopping experience as outlined by those design guidelines. At the top of the page, you see the overall frontage along the eastern property line. In this massing option, we have cut the frontage really in half with a large gap in massing, and that provides for views, light, and air into the residential courtyard. This mid-block opening in the massing also provides public open space along the north-south through-block connection, which is fronted by activated uses. Active uses continue at the southeast corner where the two through-block connections intersect. And the massing here is set up for large storefront-like glazing with canopies and other pedestrian-scaled building elements per the design guidelines. The western frontage along 130th mirrors that of the eastern in that the massing is broken down by a large opening mid-site. Here, though, the uses reflect the quieter residential character of the streetscape. The frontage is lined with landscaping and residential patios and entries at grade. Between the last CDC meeting and this one, the adjacent property owners submitted a letter with their suggestions for engaging with potential future development on their property. Their letter distills down to three main considerations, which are listed in the top middle of the page. And they are that the Tech City Bowl property development should provide a connection node at the southeast corner as a response to the intersecting through block connections. The through-block connections should appropriately address the relationship to vehicular traffic, and the trash staging should be located away from the through-block connections. In this massing option, we have provided through-block connections along the southern and eastern property lines in keeping with the city's original intent for zone circulation. In both cases, these are separated from the existing neighboring vehicle traffic with buffering landscaping. The landscaping will be designed to provide safety to pedestrians, but also visual access between neighboring properties, much like a typical street-style landscaping and in keeping with the city's vision for future development across the zone. The southeast corner includes active uses that provide activation where the through-block connections intersect. In this massing option, the trash staging is placed on 130th at the southwest corner between the development garage entry and the neighboring property's existing loading trash and staging. Massing option two takes a fresh look at massing. As we re-listened to the board's previous deliberation, we understood that making this development feel more porous and pedestrian-oriented is preferred by the design review board. With that in mind, this option proposes a north-south courtyard that allows for uninterrupted views through the site. The area and plan outlined with the black dash shows where the building spans above, but does not continue to grade. The massing above feels more like a connection between two other buildings, a bar-shaped building on the east and a backward C-shaped building on the west. Additionally, the residential courtyard connects to public open space both at the north along 70th and at the south at the southeast corner. Similar to the previous option, the primary residential entry is located at the northeast corner of the site. In this option, it is anchored by a grand open space, retail line 70th, and additional active uses booked in the through-block connection in locations where existing grade and context can best support pedestrian activity. The views of Northeast 70th frontage do a good job of illustrating how the open space starts to break down the massing into what feels like two buildings. The primary residential entry grounds the narrower bar-shaped building on the east, while retail lines the base of the wider building on the west. In between is a huge pedestrian open space that would provide for gatherings as well as retail spillout. This open space coupled with that at the south end of the site is roughly four times the amount required by code. Like the previous study, the massing pushes the limits of averaging in order to reduce the wedding cake look. The eastern narrower frontage is given a more coplanar and vertical expression appropriate for identifying the main residential entry and the vehicular access for the shopping center per the design guidelines. In the top view, you can see that we're adding interest to the long eastern facade through a blend, through a bend in the facade, as well as playful deck placement and facade material composition. Because the massing angles away from the eastern property line, we are able to include more large variety trees, which would reintroduce the lush vegetated character prevalent throughout the neighborhood but lacking in the existing BCX zone. The lower images show how the massing sets up the south end of the bar building to become an anchor for community space within BCX. Active uses paired with more large public open space creates a great opportunity for a really unique architecture and public space at the southeast corner of the site. Along the western frontage, massing option 2 divides the frontage into a preferred 1/3, 2/3 composition instead of half and half. This does a couple of things for the frontage. In this option, the garage entry and trash staging are at the north end of 1/30th, where the grade is lower than the adjacent interior floor level. This means that the apartment homes nearest the garage entry and trash staging can be oriented south, so no homes at grade will have their patios adjacent to garage entry or trash staging. It also means that the residential patios along 1/30th have a better relationship to grade. This massing option also explores angling the lower portion of the facade in a cadence set by the residential units, adding more depth to the facade within that pedestrian realm and really enhancing the residential appearance of the massing itself. Massing option 2 better meets the criteria proposed by the adjacent property owner. The through block connections are provided with wider areas for walkways and landscaping, and the eastern bar-shaped portion of the massing, coupled with grand open spaces, creates an anchor at the southeast corner as desired. The trash is also located in the neighboring property's preferred location away from them. Massing option 3 is our preferred option. It has many similar benefits to option 2, but there are several key differences that make option 3 better relate to the existing neighborhood and context. This option does the best job at reducing the massing around the entire perimeter of the site for optimal visual porosity and public engagement. Similar to option two, breaks in the massing help the building feel more like two buildings instead of one. At both the north and south ends of the site, large public open spaces enhance the pedestrian experience where the massing is broken down. The primary residential entry has moved to the center of Northeast 70th frontage, where it can be located adjacent to the garage entry for easier wayfinding. This allows the northeast corner to be wrapped with retail where the through block connection begins. In this option, the eastern massing has an E shape instead of a simple bar. The E shape creates two smaller courtyards fronting the north-south through block connection, and these breaks allow for smaller open spaces that relate to adjacent active frontages and provide places for pedestrian amenities along the site's inclining topography. The addition of these smaller public spaces means this option provides the most public open space of all three options, with about 5 times as much as is required by code. The western side of the site, a third of the frontage along 1/30th is only 3 stories tall instead of the full 5, which means this option truly feels more like townhouses and more residential along that residential street and neighboring apartment complex. Along 70th, the massing appears like 2 separate but related structures. The buildings play with the angle on 70th so that the public open space naturally widens towards the center of the frontage. The shape of the open space reflects the guidance of the design guidelines by providing larger pedestrian activity zones in front of retail and a large central space for gathering while also ensuring great visibility, which is required for successful retail. In keeping with guidance to reduce the wedding cake look, the option uses step back averaging to create a coplanar portion of the facade at the northeast corner where pedestrian and vehicular traffic will turn into the shopping center. The remaining steps in the massing create opportunities for pedestrian scaled architectural expression. The upper image illustrates how the E-shaped massing creates breaks in the building along the north-south through block connections that relate to the design guidelines guidance to break down the building into a massing that feels more like the collection of smaller buildings. The open spaces provided at grade add interest to the through block connection and create natural resting stops when climbing grade. The lower images show how well the massing relates to the existing shopping center context. The residential courtyard flows into public open space and again helps break down the massing into smaller parts per the design guidelines. The open spaces in this location have optimal solar access and again coupled with the active uses at the southeast corner create a node at the southeast corner that can engage with the hypothetical future redevelopment of the adjacent property. Like massing option two, the location of the break in the massing along 130th best separates residential homes from vehicular activity and trash staging, and also promotes the best relationship between residential entry patios and sidewalk grade. Additionally, in this option, the top two floors are omitted along about a third of the frontage, which enhances the townhouse-like appearance along this residential street. The three-story expression complements the similarly scaled existing apartment complex across the street, and that level three roof provides an opportunity for exterior residential amenity that overlooks the streetscape below in keeping with the design guidelines. Massing option three achieves the goals requested by the adjacent property owner. It provides for unique architecture and large public open space anchored by active uses at the southeast corner where the two through block connections intersect. It creates friendly pedestrian paths for the through block connections that are safely separated from vehicular traffic in keeping with the city's intentions for pedestrian experience. And the waste staging and garage entries are located away from the pedestrian connection. When we developed these new massing options, we did not initially choose a preferred option. Instead, we strategically pursued all three options to their best potential while exploring a variety of tactics to respond to guidance. Only after that did we determine that option three was our preferred. And we really landed on option three as the preferred because it did the best job of breaking down the massing in the way that was described by the design guidelines. It also provides the most public open space and configures that open space in the best way for serving the design guidelines. And finally, it does the best job of relating to the existing context, fitting in with the existing neighborhood, and also being prepared for future redevelopment of the adjacent property. So much like last time, we felt like white model views void of fenestration and materials and really seen from those aerial perspectives do little to convey the actual experience of the development. And we felt like pedestrian level sketches could help explain the potential we see for the preferred massing option and better explain the experience of the pedestrian. So this first view shows the pedestrian level experience standing at the northeast corner of the site and looking west. In it, you can see the widened sidewalk with ample area for shopping and retail spillout. Elements like textured materials, overhead weather protection, and signage enrich the pedestrian realm. And the primary residential entry, which you see in the distance there in that sketch, is located near the zone's bus stop. It becomes an anchor of pedestrian movement within the site. And its three-story expression of grouped windows with signage and canopy really directly respond to the design guidelines guidance. The second view looks at the pedestrian experience along 130th. The preferred massing option three with its three-story expression, balconies, and patios exudes residential character appropriate for this residential street. Lush landscaping inspired by the Bridal Trails neighborhood character creates an enjoyable street for strolling. The proximity of the building frontage to the sidewalk provides what we like to call eyes on the street, which is a principle you're probably familiar with, which really discourages illicit activity on streets and results in safer, more pedestrian-friendly streetscapes. Next is the pedestrian experience along the southern property line. The existing context with its sea of asphalt and blank facades does not promote pedestrian engagement, but nonetheless, the preferred massing allows for a really gracious pedestrian sidewalk with landscape buffering to create a safe and enjoyable through-block connection. At the southeast corner, which you can see in the foreground of the sketch, the widened walkway allows for spill out and engagement with the active uses at grade. In the distance, the building is set back a little further and continues a more townhouse-like expression of residential patios and entries at grade. And the blend of these uses really exemplifies the vision of a mixed-use community which was discussed throughout the rezone process. Finally, along the eastern property line, we see one of the breaks in the massing along that north-south three-block connection that break down the building into smaller portions per the design guidelines. And these breaks allow for smaller public stopping points along the way that can provide public amenities per the design guidelines for pedestrians climbing the slope. The open spaces also provide flexibility to better accommodate grade change and also engage with the active uses along the way. So again, we really thank you for your time tonight. We thank you for making a special meeting to see our updated massing options. We appreciate your feedback and we look forward to it. And we really feel like with your feedback, we can move forward to the design response conference, especially with your guidance and help. So thank you. Any questions at this point?
Thank you very much, Maggie, for the great presentation. Now it's going to be time for the board to make any questions to the applicant. So who would like to start? Tyler, you're the first in my list.
thank you again. And so I will say this is that I do really appreciate the applicant taking the time and also going through that feedback that we provided in their previous meeting. I know that meeting was very long and there was a lot of information to take in. And so I appreciate you guys stepping in and taking that information and creating these three new structures, which definitely see a lot of improvement on. I do like and the concepts that you have come up with, especially including in the areas with more inclusivity, offering a variety of different areas for people and entryways for more pedestrians to come through. I think the only real question I have is just to reflect back though, and I believe that you did state that we were talking about the location of where some of the trash would be. You said it would be away from the pedestrians, that's correct. And there's a specific area that would not bother. All right, perfect. And then the other thing I was looking at in one of the concepts for the first one and the third, which both look great, the areas that showed a little bit more of a smaller pedestrian, I think that was in the third one, I believe. I'm just curious, as a you know, love of animals and a dog owner of myself, you know, is there spots that are set up for that, you know, for individuals to have, you know, have an area where they could take their pet and, you know, play around and have just a good concept in that area?
I think if you mean as kind of like a member of the public, I think it would be treated similar to other kind of public streetscapes and whatnot. So it, you know, certainly welcome to stroll, walk, all of those kind of things. Maybe some of the seating areas could also provide water station for a dog to stop and drink. I don't think there's anything that at this moment in time is designated like a dog run or anything like that, like a large open space where you would take your dog off a leash, because there is, you know, streets nearby, the traffic of the shopping center nearby, you wouldn't want your dog to hop some landscaping and jump out there. But, you know, if it were a priority of the, a priority of the boards to, you know, have some facilities for pets along the way, certainly that would be something that we could look at and explore as part of the public amenities along the through block connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear you. It's more in the context of like, if let's say that they were walking their dog along the street and they, you know, animal wanted to go to an area to use a potty, like, did they have the like little stands or something, or like you said, like a little dog bowl area, but that's something later on that we can discuss. But overall, when it comes to the design and what you guys have taken in, I think that it is a very good concept.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate your questions and comments.
Thank you, Tyler. Amy, would you like to be next?
I have a follow-up question about the trash collection. Is it still going to be pulled out? In other words, in your last presentation, the idea was to have bins that you're going to pull out and it will, and park on the street during trash collection day?
Yes, that is still the intention. The trash trucks themselves need so much head height for being able to take the dumpsters and flip them over their head is like I like to say, you know, they pick them up and raise them up over top. That being able to accommodate that into a parking garage is super limited in terms of height. So the intention right now is to have them pulled out into a designated area along the streetscape for that kind of trash collection. What I can say right now is we've located it. It's kind of hard to see. It's right now, our thought is that blue box right there that you kind of see dashed. We've actually been exploring moving it to this side. We have to verify that with the trash collection and to make sure that there's enough room there. But we have thought about that because the Pagliacci trash pickup will be right next to that in the same area. So there's already trash collection that's going to happen right at that corner of Pagliacci. And so if we can get ours to fit right there, then we'll pursue that as well. If not there, then it would be here. And again, I think what's important to note is that's only coming out for pickup. And there are rules in Kirkland that can't stay out for more than 24 hours. So it would come out for pickup, be picked up, and then be brought back in. It would not just sit out there all week long.
And what type of uses are intended for the that part of your building that's across it?
So this is residential, but this was an area where I was trying to kind of describe with words. Maybe I can do a little annotating. There's a hallway that comes out here. That's part of required egress. This is the garage entry here. And so there is a residential unit here, but because we have this break in the massing, it can have a patio that is actually on its south. So its primary orientation will be to the south, not out towards that trash. Also, because we've put that trash staging at the far north end, this is where we have the largest amount of grade change on 130th. So the elevation of this floor is a little higher, not just a little, a couple feet higher, more like 3, 4, 5 feet higher than what's going on here. So with some landscaping along here, we have a good separation and a good buffer. So we do have residential use there, but not in a way that they're going to feel inhibited by the presence of the trash.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Any other?
Yes, yeah. I'm guessing that next is Brad.
Yes, so I guess first you mentioned that you had contact and some coordination with the property owners to the south. Could you tell me a little bit more about what that process was and some of their comments and how exactly you guys coordinated beyond just that kind of southeast node?
Yeah, we can definitely talk to that. I think Jessie Clawson is probably the best person to speak to that. I know she's on, and if she wants to, I can even stop sharing for a minute, Jessie, if you like.
No, you can keep sharing. We should, it's okay. Fine to have that thing on. Yeah, we have had a couple of calls with the property owners to the south. As Tony noted, there is no requirement for, you know, any sort of a master plan, obviously, in the zoning, which is consistent with what the property owners to the south really wanted through this code amendment process. So I think you can see throughout our presentation how we took the comments that they made in writing and we addressed them in our documentation here. So, you know, they've stated all along for, you know, this whole rezone or code amendment process that they have long-term leases on their property. They have no intention of redeveloping anytime soon. But, you know, we are definitely setting up our pedestrian pathways and our building edges in a way that allows for the redevelopment, obviously, of their property. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, good.
And another question, I mean, I know right now we're early and we're just talking about massing, but I'm curious about materiality. Because you mentioned that this is going to be lead platinum. And so I'm curious if like which materials you guys are starting to think about and also kind of the amount and type of glazing to be used. Also if green roofs or an occupied roof will be used on this project.
So we have looked into, there are portions that are occupied roofs. I should definitely start off by saying that. The overall roof, the highest portion of the roof, we don't currently show as occupied. And so as a result, it probably won't be all green roof. It quite possibly will have solar panels on a good portion of it. You know, we're still really early in all of this, but we do have it as a requirement to meet LEED Platinum, and we're actually really excited about it because you don't see a lot of, especially wood frame structures that are in the LEED Platinum category. A lot of it will be handled through building systems. So the way you heat your water, your domestic water heating, the way you ventilate, all of those kind of things will actually play a really large role into it, as well as electrical vehicle stations, things of that nature will play a large part in it. So I don't know that I can speak to anything too specific at this moment. In terms of building materials, we'd be looking at a variety of materials. Things with recycled content always go a long way for helping reach LEED Platinum. But again, the building systems will probably take the brunt of earning points because that's where you have the biggest impact on really improving the environmental quality of your building.
And that triggers a memory. Didn't the state of Washington pass a code for commercial buildings not using gas anymore? In effect? So this will be all electric?
Yes, there will be no gas in this building except for, I believe the only exception is for a commercial kitchen in like a restaurant.
Restaurants and kitchens.
That's the only.
Yep.
Yeah. But all the kitchens in the residential units, there will be no gas. Domestic hot water heating, no gas. All of that kind of thing. There'll be no gas in the, as a matter of fact, I don't even believe we can have fire pits in like the amenity spaces. So like on the exterior because they're gas. So no gas.
Okay. And then last question, is the roof planning to be internally drained or will there be downspouts running along the exterior?
We haven't gotten that far into the design, and it very likely could be a blend of both. It is a really large project, and so, you know, it could be handled differently in different areas. And I suppose if you had a preference or guidance on that, we'd love to hear it because it will help us be better prepared coming into our next meeting.
Well, I prefer internally drained, but I know with a lot of wood framing and residential, that doesn't always happen just because a bunch of downspouts and vents on the exterior buildings sometimes muck up the design and kind of the massing, you know, and vision of, you know, the designers. But yeah, I wasn't sure if that had been selected yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten that far into it.
All right. Well, thank you. That's everything for me.
Thanks,
Carlos.
Thank you, Brad. Randall and Tyler, I see that you are raising your hand. So after Randall, I'll let you take the stage.
If Tyler has a question, have him go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, Tyler.
Thanks, Randall. Yes, it's very, very quick. And it's just a follow-up to what you're saying about the fire pits. Is that said, a community barbecue, is that something that's not going to be added, or is that something that you guys will be looking into?
We'll be looking into it. We'll be looking into it. They cannot be hard plumbed into the gas anymore as part of that that rule of no gas, but there are other options out there. So
okay,
it's something we'll be looking into. It's certainly desirable to have barbecues. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's all.
Thank you. Randall?
Okay, I'll jump in and I'm kind of not sure where I start. I have to commend the applicant and the applicant design team. I prefer your preferred option number 3. And as from our discussions last time and what you have here now are really two totally different projects. And I greatly appreciate your efforts because as you look at this, as I go through it, I look at it along 70th. The way that you have dropped that into really a usable commercial plaza, retail plaza with, you know, it's tied with the entrance to the building, but that's a very pleasant, and that works, that I think will work very well along 70th. And then as you look at the eastern side of the building where you've got the notches on option 3, that notch into the building in that pedestrian way that would come from 70th up into the shopping center. And that, I think that'll work extremely well. It really gives a very good neighborhood activation. The way that I'm seeing it is that you've activated that first floor. Same thing along the west side, the kind of townhouse design, the patios, and even the way that you've detailed and taken into account the unit that kind of faces or would face to the west where the trash would be, but now it faces to the interior court or the court entry. And that very, very pleasant design along that street. And then how you actually relate to the shopping center that, yes, as we discussed last time, you really don't know what that would ever be developed to. And the way that you've placed the building and that, and then you've been able to cut the building up into really two buildings with that interior court opening out from your project into the shopping center, that currently right now, it just kind of extends the drive aisle in front of the shopping center into a pleasant landscaped area and a community, community within itself. So I think as far as activating this building all the way around, all sides, you've done extremely well. And I think there's a couple added roof decks on here that are high quality amenities and this type of thing. And so I just, as I look at the massing on this and from where we discussed last time to where we're at now, I'm really pleased with your work and what you've done and what the applicant has done here to sort this out. So I'm really ready to move forward and see what the materiality process is, and the minor articulation that you'll be putting in the facade around the building, and that to continue this design, because I think this is going to be a very quality product here in the Bridal Trails area. So that's just my comments are just to compliment you on job well done. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's really meaningful, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Randall. I guess that it's my turn, Maggie. So I have a few questions, if you don't mind. I'll start by asking, I'm looking at the three options that you presented today. And thanks for showing that. That's very clear. I'm seeing a lot of interior courtyards, kind of like these corridors that separate the buildings, basically cut them. Just wondering if that's going to be open to the public or if you are going to close those private spaces at some point. What's kind of like the intent?
So the intent on these really like internal ones, whether we're talking about any of the options, but these areas kind of way back in here, the intention would be for those to be private. Now, I don't think they would have some sort of huge, solid, massive fence that would prevent views in and out. But for resident security and safety, because we do plan to put patios for residents down there, and residents will want to be able to keep their patio furniture out there and, those kind of things, really in this day and age and market, residents will expect to have some level of security for those courtyard spaces just for their own safety. So they would be, those spaces would be private. Now, let's see, if I go to the preferred option, all of these areas that are kind of yellow with the red dashes around them, that's the areas that we've deemed as public open space, where we're purposefully widening, sidewalks or adding gathering space, that kind of thing. As well as the connection, of course, along these red dash lines, that's all public as well as the streetscape. And those yellow areas that you see there, that's the area in particular that I was describing as that's five times what's requested by code. So that's the area that we're deeming public at this moment. the area is kind of right up against the building right around here. There'd be residential patios, and then back into this would be residential as well as this area. Does that help?
Yeah, so looking at this, this is a great plan that you have right now. It virtually mean that the true block connection happens on the south and the east only, and that none of these options present the ability for the public to basically walk through these two buildings, or?
Yes, that is correct. So it's interesting because we did, it's what's not shown in this presentation is when we really came back from the first CDC, we actually created 7 new options and whittled it down mm-hmm. from there. And we did look at trying to pull pedestrians through the middle of the site with more public through block connections, but there were several challenges with that beyond just security for residences. There were some current concern about the level of activation that would be needed to make those really feel like public spaces, and a concern that actually the public would not feel comfortable walking through it. We did reach out to Tony throughout this, and we even talked with a planner who helped go through the upzone process with the Planning Commission and all of that. Originally in the Planning Commission process, the through block connections were kind of identified on a plan, and mm-hmm. through the input of the adjacent property owners, it was kind of determined, no, we don't want to create a master plan for this because we don't know when things will get redeveloped. And so nothing was set in stone about exactly where those through block connections needed to happen. But when we look at those through block connections, they're really there to serve the whole zone, not just the site. And this was really kind of the original intention of where they belonged, was along kind of our eastern property line and southern property line, because that was the best for the whole zone, not just our property, if that makes some sense.
Yeah. So the small areas that are shown on the east portion of mm-hmm. the property, I see like those two dots. Are they only going to be public, kind of like aligned with the sidewalk, or are they planning to expand a little bit into these green courtyards that you have in there? Just wondering, what's the extent of it?
Oh, what's the extent?
Kind of like a public benefit, sorry.
Yeah, they are intended to be smaller. We didn't think it was appropriate to provide giant spaces everywhere. Instead, creating a variety of spaces seemed appropriate for the site. So they are a little on the smaller side, but they're still plenty large enough for seating, for potential trash cans, other sort of amenities like that along the way. They're not just they're larger than like just a bench next to the sidewalk. They're definitely larger than that, but not the whole of that, those little courtyards.
Okay.
That's helpful.
Now, regarding setbacks and step backs, from what I'm seeing here, for all building facades facing and within 100 feet of the abutting right-of-way, all portions of the structure that are greater than 3 stories in height, as measuring from the right-of-way, shall be step back. Looking at the perspective that you have right now that is shown, showing the northeast 7th, could you zoom in there? Yeah. So the building mass that is on the left, I believe that's more than 3 feet and it's within the 100 feet, right?
Correct. So what you're allowed to do is average. So create an average step back of 12 feet. On this facade, it's 8 feet. And so what we're doing is working through, this is a little deeper, and we have a little bit deeper area here where we've got a little bit of variation along here. And between those things, that allows us a portion that when you average across that whole frontage, we're able to achieve an area that is coplanar. And we really did that because the design guidelines are pretty clear that we want to avoid that prescriptive wedding cake look, even though the zoning code really kind of forces you into that prescriptive wedding cake look. But that's why you're able to see this area of a portion that looks coplanar is because it is an average step back. It's also taken from the facade below. And so it doesn't matter how far back from the property line or from the street you're located. It's really about that step in the massing at that level 3 datum. Does that help explain?
I have a question for Tony's city staff. Hey, Tony, I'm just reading this, and my interpretation of the code is that says that for it specifically says all portions of a structure greater than 3 stories in height shall be stepped back, and it gives the 8 feet average. But to my interpretation, the 8 feet average is whether like you reduce at some points the depth or you increase them. What is kind of like the right interpretation of that section?
Well, I mean, I think so it says from northeast 70th, that portion of 130 and that portion 132nd from Schneider by an average of 8 feet.
And the paragraph above, it says all mm-hmm. portions of a structure, so
all for all building facades facing within 100 feet of the adjoining right away, all portions of a structure greater than 3 stories in height, they're admitted from the abutting roof, shall be stepped back from the 3rd story facade as follows from northeast
by now. I mean, it doesn't mean that the applicant needs to provide kind of like a flat facade of 8 feet, mm-hmm. but it means, to my interpretation, it means that they can like push it back and and front and an average. So mm-hmm. it doesn't look like a plain building massing, but rather it gives more interest in providing different depths rather than mm-hmm. having a volume that is very tall.
Correct. Yeah, and I think the second part of it is, so there's a calculation that they need to do on that in section 3 of that, which takes into account this. So I think that's something that obviously the applicant will need to show as part of the design response conference, will need to show compliance with this section. They'll need to provide an analysis showing that it's meeting all of these calculations. So that's something that they will need to do as part of that, as part of that application.
All right. And Maggie, another question for you now. For the facade that is closer to the property on northeast 70th, are you guys proposing to have any balconies there, and if so, will they be basically protruding into like the setbacks
on this northeast 70th facade?
Yeah.
At the moment, we're not proposing any balconies along there, partly because it's the north face of the building, and so it faces a major arterial. And so generally speaking, it's not a place that residents are necessarily going to really use that outdoor balcony like they would on other facades of the building. What I can say is we do have those step backs built in there, and we are planning to use those currently as outdoor patios for the units that front on them. So you would have outdoor spaces along those areas there, where taking advantage of the step back, which I believe is also in the design guidelines about providing spaces where you have step backs in the building to look down onto the street below. And then it's these larger ones that happen up at the top level, that's part of the setback that's required for that top floor. And we would also have amenity space, a little bit of common amenity space for the building on those, as well as residential patios on those as well. But no bolt-on, no attached decks on this facade.
Okay, is there a view showing the facade on 130th Avenue Northeast?
Yeah.
Just wondering what's kind of like the step back there. How's that looking like?
So this one again is an average. The average here though needs to be 12, not 20, not 8. And this portion here is mostly coplanar. We have looked into having decks or balconies or Juliet balconies along that facade because it is Western. It also is going to space onto some nice greenery and the residential streetscape there. This portion has no building above, and that's allowing us, that's part of how we're achieving the average, because the building there has quite a large setback. And then we have some setback here in front of this portion here. I should also say, I'll point out that this right here where this canopy is currently, let's see, I can just highlight it. This floor, that's an amenity room for residents. And then this rooftop is outdoor amenity for residents. So there's quite a bit of activation actually kind of at this higher level on this facade.
Okay. And yeah, I'm just concerned about the other building meeting kind of like the step back requirement, but I'll just let the city kind of like clarify that on the next meeting, whether like that needs to be kind of like just apply to portions of the building, or if it needs to be in all on all portions of the structure that are greater than 3 feet. So that's kind of like my question. And there's also a requirement in the guidelines that says that for facades over 120 feet in length, they should incorporate vertical definition, including substantial modulation of the exterior wall carried throughout the floors. What is currently the length of the mass kind of like that has kind of like the, those gray columns? Is it more than 120 feet? Yeah.
This is the longest mass here. And it is, this piece is over 120 feet. I believe this is the only location where we don't technically meet the a full vertical break from grade up to top. That would be something that we would be asking you for guidance on if it needed something along there. Our feeling was, because we have this huge cut in the facade up above, we are doing quite a bit to change the expression and variety and break down the massing along this streetscape. And we do have these, you know, in this portion of the project is only 3 stories tall, and we do have vertical gestures going up those full 3 stories in those locations. So it's a little bit to your interpretation of if you think this is meeting the letter of what that guideline is suggesting in terms of having a vertical break within 120 feet on the facade.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's going to be something that the board will deliberate later today. And last couple of questions. What's the depth of those balconies that are facing 130?
Currently, we're showing them at, I believe they are 5 feet deep. Actually, they might be 6 feet now that I say that. They're 5 or 6. We can verify.
And are they encroaching into any setbacks?
No, they're not.
Okay. That's all that I have. Thank you very much, Maggie. I know that I went into a lot
That's
of things.
Okay.
A lot of details. All right.
Can I ask a couple of follow-up questions?
Oh, yes. Be my guest.
So sorry about that, Maggie. I'm just curious. I don't know if I heard you talk about the rooftop modulation. Do you mind? And if you haven't developed it, it's fine. But I'm just kind of curious how you guys are conceiving how the rooftops work with this project.
At the moment, we have some degree of parapets going up and down. We're mostly keeping it in tune with where we do have kind of those bigger overall breaks in the massing. Just as Carlos pointed out, you know, the design guidelines suggest that there should be a vertical break every 120 feet or less. And so we have that everywhere except for kind of right here along this exact facade. And so that we're using those breaks to help deal with changing the parapets and the articulation of the roof line so far. I do think it would be something that if you look at these illustrations as you deliberate and feel like you wish you saw more ups and downs or more variation in the roofline, that would be great feedback for us, because it's certainly something we can explore and look for an added layer of or additional variation along those.
Mm-hmm. And then my other question is just for clarification. Where is the residential lobby entrance again?
The residential lobby entrance, let's see here, is right here, kind of at this corner of this piece of massing. So if we look in that aerial view right now, we're showing it right here. If we go to the streetscape image, let's see here, I think it's the first one. So in this streetscape sketch, this is all retail. This is the residential entry right here. Mm-hmm. We'd likely be looking at signage around it, a little bit different canopy definition. And then beyond mm-hmm. that is the garage entry and additional retail.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you. That's all I have.
Sure.
Thank you, Amy. Is there anyone else that would like to make some questions or have some comments? If not, this will be time for anyone in the audience to make any comments on this project in specific. Tony, do we have anyone?
Yes, just a sec here. I'm sorry, I need to find that piece here. Mm-hmm. Yes, so we do have one attendee. So if anybody would like to speak, we ask that they raise their hand and then we'll allow them to speak. Currently we have Stuart Tans who would like to speak.
Yeah, so please, when you do speak, state your full name and then provide an email address and spell your email address out, please. Thank you.
Great, thank you. My name is Stuart Tans. My email address is stans@roireit.net. And I am the CEO of Retail Investment and Properties Trust. RYC is a publicly traded company that focuses on managing and redeveloping shopping centers. Currently in the Seattle metro area, we own and operate 23 shopping centers. And we are engaged and supportive of the city Bridal Trails redevelopment efforts. As I mentioned at the previous design conference, Mill Creek is the second largest property owner at Bridal Trails with a significant holding in the northwest corner of the Bridal Trails Shopping Center. The build-out of Bridal Trails redevelopment will be in pieces over time. Mill Creek's redevelopment is a significant piece, and we will determine if the Bridal Trails redevelopment is a success because of the redevelopment pieces must work together. The board asks RIC how it is properly could be redeveloped to inform its review of this proposal. And our ROIC provided the board, city, and Mill Creek with an MG2 redevelopment study. The key findings of this redevelopment study are that the two code requirement pedestrian pathways on Mill Creek's proposal must connect at a southeast connection mode plaza. From this point, other property owners can pick up the pathways. We're happy to see that Mill Creek incorporated the pedestrian pathway and connection node into their proposal. This is a very positive step in the right direction. Mill Creek's design revisions are also pointing in the right direction as well. We ask that the board support the pedestrian pathways and the southeast connection node. We've asked MG2 to comment on design alternatives from an architectural and planning standpoint. You will hear from Mark Taylor on these items later. And of course, I'm also available to answer any questions. But more importantly, I want to make it very clear that ROIC is supportive of the board's deliberations and the redevelopment of the Bridal Trails. At the board's request, we hired MG2 to prepare the Bridal Trails redevelopment study. Please let us know if we can provide the board with any other information to inform its deliberations. And with that, I think we'll hand it over to Mark at MG2.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Mark, it's your turn. Could you please spell your email as well?
Yes, I will. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My name is Mark Taylor. My email address is mark.taylor@mg2.com. And at MG2, I am a design principal with 20 plus years of experience working on mixed use development projects. And I wanted to, and again, just to reiterate some of Stuart's points, you know, that the Bridal Trails redevelopment, you know, as we were looking at that, it is something that is happening over a period of time in phases, and where the Mill Creek development is something that's happening more currently, and the success of this project will determine the success of the future elements that happen on RLIC's property at Bridal Trails. I think we definitely want to agree that there's a lot of good things are happening here. The revisions are headed in the right direction. We like that direction that it's heading. We really want to appreciate the attention to detail that was taken by the design team to take our considerations into view. The through block pedestrian pathway, as Carlos had mentioned, you know, is confined to both edges of the property. I think I'd appreciate the need to not have it go through the project, but it seems like there might be some opportunities to allow that to happen, as it seems like a very natural design element to have that through block connection through the property as an option. From a massing standpoint, I think I want to applaud the design team for a lot of the step backs on both the Northeast 70th and the 130th. I think I would like to consider on the south facing side, facing ROIC's property, that south, you know, the mass that's directly facing the parking lot, that building facade is pretty tall, and it could potentially use a step back on that upper level as well, especially given that it's a south facing facade that would receive some really good natural light on that southern edge, and I think would help soften that southern edge so that it has a more inviting appeal to the neighbor to the south. Then one last question. Our concern is wanted to understand how the fire lane is working along that southern edge, and how they propose to have fire trucks maneuver along that edge. And with that, I will. One last thing is the garbage and location. Just support the need for that to be near the Pagliacci's on the northern end of 130th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Hey, Maggie. I guess that Mark brought up that if you could elaborate on how the fire lane is or will function based on your preferred option, I'm guessing.
Sure. So we are accommodating fire lane along the southern edge of our property line. We've been in communication with City of Kirkland Fire Department, and while I cannot say that they've stamped it with an approval because we're still at massing, what we are showing does comply with kind of the conversations we've had with them to date and is likely acceptable. All signs indicate, based on our conversations, we've had some great conversations with them, that what we're showing complies.
All right, thank you very much. Tony, do we have anyone else in the audience?
I would ask there are a few other people, but if anyone else would like to speak, I would ask they raise their digital hand. Okay. Not seeing any more.
All right.
We'll close the comment period.
Yes. So now it's time for the board to start deliberation. So board members, I guess that we've all seen all the design options that the applicants present today. One of the things that I kind of like couldn't let go without making any comments is the vertical and the horizontal modulation. I mean, I've seen throughout kind of like all the iterations that the applicant has preferred some very long volumes. I don't know how the board feels about that. what kind of like direction we should provide to the applicant regards to this. Randall, I don't know what your thoughts are on it, if that's kind of like something that you find that it still needs to be massaged or.
So you're talking primarily along 70th at longer than 120 millennial feet of facade. Is that what you're talking about?
Along 70th and 130th, I'm guessing those are the ones that apply for the right of way. And I mean, we have the true blocking, which is kind of like connecting, becoming kind of like a public corridor.
Right.
So, I mean, we've seen like some or some elevations or some perspective of the building, but still, I feel that this has a lot of horizontal lines. And I don't know, like, I want to hear your thoughts.
My thought is we're massing. And we need to let the architects run with what they're looking at this facade to look like. And we state that articulation is needed and this type of thing to see how they put that together, because there is a time and a place for different massing techniques. And a lot of times when we look at it, I mean, I feel that sometimes we look at it, there's a flat plane, so we have to articulate it. But sometimes that positive-negative relationship and design vernacular actually works into the total. We got to look at the total package of design, not necessarily the micro balcony or anything like that,
right,
to see how that works. And so I feel that the way that they've broken up the massing on this particular project, I strongly support option three, how that goes together and what it's looking at and how they've done that. And I, you know, along 70th, I feel that is excellent when you've got a kind of a wider plaza, that triangular plaza that really gives a retail space an identity and a location, and is right there at the entrance into the building. So it actually, for retail, is probably going to be effective retail. A lot of times we put retail in and it just really isn't that effective for a retail location. When we look at the relationship between this particular property and the ROIC shopping center, the through block path, you know, when we say through block pathways, I think this project does what it probably needs to do, because when you look at pedestrian flow in and around this site, it really is going to be at the south end of this project, and it's also going to be along the eastern side up the drive aisle that comes into the shopping center that this particular property doesn't have ownership of or design responsibility for. So I question the idea of, it sounded like ROIC was making a statement that they wanted one of these pathways to dissect this particular building. And I think that's a security risk. I think it splits the building in such a manner that it's then not a unified residential building. And as the applicant pointed out, that when you look at these courtyards, kind of interior courtyards, those are courtyards for the residents, not necessarily public or not public. They would have some sort of separation that keeps them out so that they can enjoy their patios or balconies within somewhat privacy there, and that type of thing. And so I support the way that the pathways, the two pathways that are right on the edges of this property work with the entire really plan or the entire massing of the complete site. When I'm talking about the footprint of the complete site and the ROIC shopping center and that type of area. Now, I too was looking at that south facade of the project, and when you've got really kind of a one half quarter type split, where the first half coming from the west to the east, you've got more of a townhouse continuation, pedestrian activation that you same as what you've got really kind of along 30th, which I think is very pleasant. It's a uniformity. Every side doesn't have to be totally different. And that as you go around, then you have the larger break in the building that goes into a deeper area there. And then you have the southeast corner. Now, in looking at this, code-wise, there's no, when you got a property line like that, there's no real, you have a setback area there, but it doesn't get into the setback management that you see along 30th and 70th or 130th and 70th. And so it may seem to be taller at that point, but that doesn't mean that SOIC has the ability to go that same height against them also. And so, you've got a property thing here going on between the two properties and that. And I just, the applicant, I think, has done an excellent job of working this into vernacular here. And, when you look at highest and best use of property development, when the larger shopping center is developed, it's not going to be a one-story shopping center someday. It's going to be a higher shopping, it's going to go higher. And so how that works and how that works in with this, we don't know at this time. And I just look at this and I support option 3 is where I stand at this point in time, and would recommend that.
Okay. I don't know, Amy, what do you think about it in terms of like massing? I just want to like add Randall that I'm not, whenever I was saying just about the scale, it was not about the specific architectural features as parapets, but it was more about the true volumes that the applicant is presenting right now. I know that they are presenting some volumes of kind of like boxes, and some of them have started to incorporate those features that kind of like break the volume into either horizontal or vertical elements. But still, for the massing, if you remove that, it's an entire volume from level 1 to level 4 that is continuous. So just wanted to kind of like add that. But Amy, what are your thoughts on it, on this project, and what's kind of like the preferred option that you are leaning towards?
I think Randall did a great job of really breaking down what's good about how they have approached their massing. I honestly find that any of these three options is a dramatic improvement from what we've seen last time. And so I'm very, very pleased with what they've done. And I think for me personally, I don't really have any issue with the massing as they're showing today, because they've actually, from my experience with a lot of these types of buildings, they've actually done a great job with breaking up the facades with the recessed open spaces. I think if you're going to stand at the street and if you were to look at these, it would almost look like smaller buildings because of those breaks. The one thing that I would just encourage the applicant is, even if you met the letter of the code in terms of calculating the average setbacks, if you have the opportunity to provide, and if it makes sense, okay, if only if it makes sense, to still introduce even a minor step back for some of your, you know, that one portion of your building that Carlos was concerned about, you know, I would just encourage you to do it. At this point, I have no issues with what the applicant has done. I would definitely look and scrutinize more the step backs and how it works with the materiality in later reviews. But for the purpose of this meeting, I definitely feel good with where they're at, and I think that they're ready to move on to the next phase. Can I also go ahead and provide my other comments, Carlos, or did you want me to just keep that and save that for later?
I think that Randall started kind of like giving all his comments, so it makes sense kind of like just to have an understanding where you're at. I know that you mentioned that it's kind of like, well, that you don't see any or don't foresee any issues by selecting any of these, but yeah, I guess that if we are gonna kind of like give the applicant some direction, we should point them to the preferred option.
Uh-huh.
With that being said, I'm just asking to see if you have one that you think that kind of like includes all these comments that we've been asking the applicant to incorporate in the past.
Yeah. So I concur with the applicant. I think option three definitely has, I mean, takes the positives of the first two options. And there's some really, really good details that are incorporated into the third option that I like. The residential entrance, the way they've treated it, and they have that special corner treatment there. I would like to encourage the applicant to continue working on that corner treatment and to further develop it. I mean, you're in the right direction. When you're looking at the Northeast 70th Street, maybe? Just look at. Sorry about that.
Northeast 70th is the north. North for south.
Right. So I really like the way they've angled the facades. Those two facades. I mean, I'm calling them two facades. It's one facade with a little recessed area. I think that that's a really, really positive move for that part, for that facade for Northeast 70th. For the east through block connection, I really commend the applicant for introducing those two, what they call stopping points. So even though they're meant to be private courtyards, I would strongly encourage them to still, maybe a lot like 5 to 10 feet of the area next to the sidewalk as a publicly accessible open space. Because I was really concerned at their last iteration how they were lining that entire through block connection with nothing but residential. And as anticipated, you know, these residential units are not going to be very interactive with the streets. And so having those two stopping points is a good opportunity to put some active uses along the through block connection. Let's see. I have no, I agree at the current location also of that east through block connection. It does make sense in the big, when you look at the entire site and where that mid block connection should be located. In the future, when the other properties redevelop, I would really expect that that through block connection will be expanded so that what we're seeing today should, it's good enough for, realistically, that's what we would expect the applicant to provide. But, for an effective through block connection, I can really anticipate, the other property developers to provide what I would consider the other half of that through block connection, to be effective. And then for the open spaces, I'm definitely, I'm satisfied with what they're showing today at a conceptual level, but definitely for the purposes of, determining their public open spaces, I would be looking at how those spaces are designed, what type of landscape treatment, and how they're programming them, and how they relate to the ground floor uses of those buildings. I also, this is more of a positive element that I just wanted to give credit to the applicant. I also appreciated how they treated every facade, like the north is treated differently than the east and the south. At this level of review, in terms of their horizontal and vertical massing and modulation, I'm satisfied with what I'm seeing. I would be really interested to see how they're going to make those balconies work. Right now they don't, they look tacked on into the building, but I'm going to hold my assessment of them until I see how the materiality works with what they're trying to do there. So those are my comments.
Thank you very much, Amy. I think I agree with you on the stopping points on the east connection corridor. I believe that, as you said, if it's a through block connection, it should have some sort of seating area to enhance the experience there, and not just a simple corridor with landscaping on both sides, which doesn't like bring any interest or makes it different than any other projects. Now, regarding the step backs, I think that I agree as well on encouraging the applicant to further study incorporating step backs if possible. And I'm guessing that I'll just leave that to the applicant, to study if there are opportunities that they can take advantage on. But just to continue the conversation with the massing, Brad, do you have any comments, thoughts about it? And also, what's your preferred option?
Yeah, I have a little bit of concern about the vertical modulation along some of kind of the shear sides. Northeast 70th place, you know, has some step backs there from the lower levels, but the through block connections don't. And also, especially within the internal courtyards, particularly that deep one that cuts in from the south. But this is, I do think, is a very good response from the applicant. I like all of the layouts and options they presented. And if the third option is their preferred, I'm not seeing anything that would stop this design from proceeding through to a future response conference. And any concerns we might have can be dealt with in a future meeting.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for kind of like reading kind of like my mind about just like the horizontally, the basically modulation at some other areas that we haven't seen or analyzed that well. I think that it's important for the applicant to like just go back and I mean, option three seems to be working in terms of like connection for this project, but still, I guess that it needs to be refined. Tyler, what are your comments and thoughts about the project? Hey, Tyler, you're muted.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Apologies. Little technical difficulty there. Anyways, I support like what Randall said. You know, there is areas that was expressed that does have some concern, but I also, you know, encourage the applicant to take the information that they have and let them work with it. You know, there is going to be a lot of trial and tribulation, but I think that the overall fundamental of what we had expressed and their response to it has been definitely beneficial and exceeded what we had concerns around and what they were able to propose to us. So I do think that we should proceed to the next step of the process for them. I do think that some of these concerns could be grown and rectified organically. But I support the applicant as far as the third preferred option. I do also support of maybe putting in some areas like a, you know, park bench areas that can show more attractiveness to pedestrians to come in and enjoy the space. But overall, I praise them and good job.
Thank you, Taylor. I think that I guess that everyone has said that option three is the preferred option, which I support as well. I think that as Randall mentioned, creating wider plazas at the front and breaking up the mass on the way on the east where we have the corridor, it's kind of like wise and kind of like adds to the project. So I don't foresee why the applicant wouldn't like continue with their application by choosing option three. Now, it seems from what I heard, Brad, Amy, myself had like some concerns about the volumes in terms of horizontal and vertical modulation. This can be reviewed on the next meeting, but it wouldn't kind of like stop them in their process. I'm hopeful that the applicant will take these comments and incorporate them in for their future presentation. And I don't know if anyone else has any comments to not proceed with option three, but it sounds like that's what the board is deciding. Am I correct?
Yes.
I support that.
I do as well.
Awesome. So I guess that Tony, our final decision is to move forward with option three and to encourage the applicant to further study vertical and horizontal modulation to incorporate those stopping points along the east corridor to enhance the pedestrian experience for the public, and to come up the material samples, elevations, all the information that is required for the design response conference.
Okay, great. I guess I would ask the applicant if they had any questions regarding the requested items.
I'm sorry, Tony, you cut out there at the end. You said ask the applicant what?
ask if you had any questions regarding, so just the summary and the items that the DRB has requested to see as part of the design response.
No, I think their guidance has been great, and we appreciate the feedback and all the great comments, and we look forward to coming back in front of you.
Awesome. So Maggie, just to be clear, for next meeting, the board will look into more refined information of option three, obviously incorporating, if possible, some of the suggestions that we gave you today regarding massing, and again, the further study of how these connections work, and if they're gonna provide any seating options, any amenities for the public, but also to request building elevations of all the facades, an initial study of the materials, lighting plan, site plan. Also, we would like to see that the project complies and that none of the building elements encroach into the setbacks. And guessing that we typically see floor plans and roof plans just to understand what's happening at the occupied rooftop areas.
Sounds good, thank you.
All right. Well, I guess that we'll continue with the administrative reports. So we'll need to pull for attendance for next DRB meeting. John, Tony, when is that gonna happen? And I'm guessing that for this project, the Moderna Bright, do we need to pick a date, or does the applicant need to pick a date?
No, so the applicant will now apply for their design response conference application. We'll review that, and then we determine, we have to notice it and all that stuff. So that's something the staff will determine the date
after
the application has been received. Just a heads up, we do have, so we do have enough for attendance of a special meeting on September 12th. So we will be noticing that this week. It's going to be the design response conference for the RDEA at a Totem Lake project that you reviewed a few months back from the conceptual design.
All right. I'm guessing that the city will make a round of calls to make sure that all the RRB members, most of them, are going to be available to meet.
Yeah, we actually polled before we scheduled that one, because it was going to be a special meeting, because our next meeting would fall on Labor Day. So
sounds great. Yep. All right. Well, now we'll proceed to adjournment. Anyone would like to suggest
adjournment? Actually, Carlos, before you move,
yeah,
just a couple of quick updates. So, if you haven't already, please respond to my email on the new date for the DRB walking tour downtown. We had to postpone that last week because of the heat. So if you haven't already, please respond. It's going to be, I think the dates were somewhere in mid-September. Some of you already responded, so thank you for that. Once I get all of the responses, I'll figure out which date had the most yeses on availability, and then we'll go ahead and noticed that about a week beforehand. And then just a heads up on the Design Review Board September 19th meeting. So I have on the agenda for Allison Zeich, our deputy director, to come to the Design Review Board meeting and to give background on the station area plan in anticipation of some projects that are going to be occurring there. So I think that'll be helpful. And I think that was some of the feedback the board provided a couple months ago. It'd be helpful to get some updates as these business districts or long range plans are getting adopted to give the board more timely background on these changes. So thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, John. Just by curiosity, how many people have replied to your email about the walking tour?
I think three.
Okay. So for the members that are still deciding to go or not, please send an email to John so we can get that schedule as soon as possible. And we don't continue pushing that back. All right. If there's nothing else from staff, I'll ask again if anyone would like to suggest an adjournment.
I make a motion, we adjourn.
I will second.
All right, move and second for adjournment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, I'm guessing no one. So we are adjourned. Thank you for your time, and we'll see everyone next time.
Thank you. Night. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.